Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
That's right. All across the world, I guess. Well, it is, Andrew. You don't need to... You're not patting yourself on the back. It's just true. Streaming. CBSSportsRadio.com. On satellite at Sirius XM Channel 206. And the radio.com app, which you need to get right now, download it today. It's free, lets you listen anywhere. It's the Pony Express, CBS Sports Radio. As we are hanging out for day one of this new wild card format in the NFL, and it got off with a bang here. The Bills winning their first playoff game since 1995, 27-24 over the Colts. Colts beat themselves in a lot of ways. I don't mean with turnovers. I mean with leaving points on the board. For the Colts this year, the 472 yards that they racked up offensively was the most all season by them. Most all year. And they became the first team in NFL playoff history to have more than 470 yards of offense, no turnovers, and lose. So a dubious honor for them. The Bills defensively lucky to walk away with a win. They were bailed out by their offense. That offense scored 10 points in the fourth quarter. Had a 98-yard drive at the end of the first half. Made the most of their opportunities. Kicked a 54-yard field goal. Josh Allen didn't turn the ball over. And they're on to another home playoff game against either the Steelers, Titans, or Ravens. Andrew Filippone at the Pony Express on Twitter, like the name of the show, Pony spelled P-O-N-I. I'm coming to you from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family. Rocket can. Halfway through the first quarter in Seattle, scoreless, and this is supposed to be low scoring. The Rams, the number one defense in the NFL, playing a backup quarterback. They have Jared Goff active, but they are starting John Wolford after he beat the Cardinals last week without scoring an offensive touchdown. So Wolford is in, scoreless. Russell Wilson down the stretch couldn't connect on deep balls. The Seahawks offensively became a stagnant unit in the second half, averaged only 23 points per game. And so this is going to be an ugly game, and it's scoreless early, although the Rams right now are driving. They have the ball inside the Seattle 30-yard line. Tonight at 8:15 Eastern, 5:15 Pacific, it's the Buccaneers and Washington. For a look at the Bucs, John Ledyard from Pewter Report does a great job covering Tampa and the Bucs and Tom Brady and company, and he joins us right now on CBS Sports Radio. John, let's start with Mike Evans. Tell us about his status for this game.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he is, I think, not going to be 100%, but he is going to be at a point where I think they're going to feel comfortable playing him. And again, you know, how he goes out and warms up before the game matters. You know, there's nothing set in stone yet, but I'd be pretty surprised if he doesn't try to give it a go based on all indications from this week. He tested it out. He ran on it a little bit. He practiced lightly on it. And so they'll see how it goes. And maybe he's on a pitch count. I'm not sure. It probably depends the game situation. And it also probably depends on how well he's able to manage the pain and if there is any and you know, things like that. So we'll see what exactly you know, his status will be in terms of how much he plays. But I do think he'll be out there for the first snap for the Bucs.
Okay, if he's out there, John, what kind of difference do you think he makes in this game?
Well, you know, he honestly, his primary difference in the game may come as, I don't want to say decoy because that's disrespectful to what he does, but Washington is kind of like their whole defensive philosophy is built upon stopping the deep ball. Like they've allowed the least amount of deep balls tied with the Rams, amounting the least amount of 20-plus yard passes this entire season. So they are kind of built around that philosophy. So you'll see a lot of two-high safeties. You'll see some quarters coverage. So their defense kind of really wants to take away Mike Evans anyway. So by having him out there, let them take away him and then work the middle of the field with Chris Godwin and with Rob Gronkowski, with Antonio Brown. And that's really, I think, where Tampa Bay is kind of going to make their money in this game. And so, you know, there's obviously always a potential for an explosive play down the field and on the outside with Evans, you know, the curls and the comebacks and things like mm-hmm. that. They'll try to target him on those. But my guess is this might be a game where Chris Godwin and Antonio Brown would feast more than Evans, even if Evans were 100% healthy.
Did Brown turn the corner the last game of the year, John?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of that, Andrew. I mean, there was the getting kind of acclimated to the offense. There's still some disconnect with he and Brady on vertical uh-huh. routes this season, where he's been kind of he's messing up some routes and not running them exactly where Brady would like them. But one of the best things that happened is over the course of the season, you know, the Bucs realized that we can get this guy the ball very quickly and he can make plays in space. And that is really the one missing element from the Bucs receiving core that Brown has been able to fill. So tons of the screens out to him over the last couple weeks have been really effective for them. They've gotten him the ball and let him kind of do his thing. Good blocking out there by Chris Godwin and others. So that's really been effective. It's not just been Brown figuring out kind of getting acclimated with the rest of the offense. It's also been the Bucs coaching staff saying, okay, how can we use this guy best? And then also realizing they can use him as an X receiver and he can beat press coverage at a very high rate, and that can open up things for other guys. So they've started to tweak with his versatility, and that's opened up the offense for him and his role in the offense.
Tampa Bay Bucs analyst John Ledyard, our guest here on CBS Sports Radio. Tampa and Washington is the nightcap tonight, day one of Super Wild Card Weekend. Ask you about another Bucs injury on offense, or not injury, but a guy that's missed time. Ronald Jones at running back. What's his role going to be tonight, John?
I think he's good to go. I think that they're not super concerned with him. You know, Ronald Jones usually comes off the field on obvious passing downs and, 2-minute drills and things like that in place of Leonard Fournette. So I would expect that to continue. But it's hard to look at the sample size of this entire season and think that there's a better option just purely running the football for the Bucs than Ronald Jones. He's not perfect. He's definitely made his mistakes this season, but most of those have come in the passing game with drops and fumbles and not being able to break tackles and things like that. So that's a role that's going to continue to probably be weak. When you look at this Bucs running back group, there's really not a great receiving back out of the group, and that obviously matters and would help any offense. But everywhere else, they are pretty strong. So they think if they can just get the best running back out there, the best guy really typically with the ball in his hands out of that running back room, which is Ronald Jones, that's kind of their best bet to be able to hit explosive plays. And that's really what it's about in the running game. You want to be able to maximize each carry that you have. The Bucs aren't going to be a team that probably runs the ball 30 mm-hmm. times, 25 times in a game, but who maximizes the opportunities you do get? And so far this season, that's clearly been Jones.
John, the critical matchup for Tampa is going to be their offensive line against that Washington front. So what do you think? I mean, are the Bucs, from a blocking standpoint, are they up to the challenge?
You know, I think they really are. I think it's a matter of making sure the communication's in place. I think the talent and the skill are there, but is the communication in place and is the scheme right? You know, people see a quarterback get hit, they tend to say, oh, that's on the offensive line. The offensive line's not protecting him. Well, a lot of times the quarterback should have gotten rid of the ball, or the hot route wasn't there and the receiver didn't turn around and look for it. It wasn't there, so the quarterback had to eat it, or, you know, they overloaded a side and the quarterback didn't expect it. So there's a lot that goes into it. I think talent-wise, the Bucs have the talent in their front five. I mean, center Ryan Jensen, left guard Ali Marpet, Tristan Wirfs, right tackle. Those three have really played at an all-pro, Pro Bowl type of level this season.
Okay.
Alex Kappa at right guard's been great. Donovan Smith at left tackle has made strides. He's still probably the weak link, and he has to go up against Chase Young. So it's a group that has been really, really good this season. Probably one of the undersold storylines of the Bucs season is how good that group has been. But this is a great test because not only is Washington really talented up front, they're also extremely deep up front, and they'll blitz you. So they challenge you on every level. So it's a huge test for them. Obviously, Brady, not the most mobile quarterback, but he can also beat pressure with his mind and his quick release. And so how the Bucs scheme those things up to make sure they can get the ball out of Brady's hands in a timely fashion and he's not getting drilled all game will probably be key to whether this offense succeeds or not.
John Ledyard from Pewter Report is our guest. Bucs analyst does an outstanding job for them. Let's update people on what's going on in Seattle. 4 minutes to go, first quarter. John Wolford started over Jared Goff. He took off and scrambled on second down, got drilled by Jamal Adams, was not a dirty hit. The guy was a runner. He was dinged up. Medical staff came out. Wolford has left the game. Goff has gone in. He's active with a thumb injury coming off the surgery, but he was deemed good enough to dress but not good enough to start. first play gets sacked, and the Rams are going to settle for a field goal attempt. John, I know you take a look at more than just the Bucs and you care about most of the NFL. What did you make of the decision by the Rams? And the kick is good from 40 yards out, so LA goes up 3-0 here. What did you make of the call to start Wolford when Goff was healthy enough to play?
Yeah, kind of fascinating to me. My guess is that they felt like the banged up version of Goff was maybe worse than the version of Wolford, and maybe it was the element of Wolford being a better scrambler that they felt like would test Seattle or maybe get them an explosive play here or there where Goff wouldn't have. And so maybe they felt that way with Goff injured. I would assume that if Goff were truly 100%, but then it's always confusing to me because now Goff comes into the game. It's like,
right.
Well, I mean, you know, didn't you think this guy still was probably your best option over John Wolford to win a playoff game? It seems a little bit like overthinking it.
That's what I mean. And Goff's had a bad year, and he definitely took a step backwards this season. But you paid him a ton of money. He's a former number one overall pick. He's gone to a Super Bowl. He's either your guy or not. And to me, if he gets the thumbs up, if the medical staff clears him, I can't believe. I mean, Wolford was fine last week, but he played a backup, and he didn't score an offensive touchdown. So I'm flummoxed by everything that's going on there. Let me ask you about the look. We know the Bucs defense probably won't get tested in this game, but what is it big picture, John? Do you look at it right now as a defense that's capable of helping a team win a Super Bowl?
That's really the question, Andrew. I mean, I think that for the first half of the season they were pretty good, and then honestly, it was right after the loss or the victory over the Packers where they crushed them, and they really the only team all year to slow down Aaron Rodgers. They just haven't looked the same since then. I mean, you know, the offense has been lighting it up more often than not. But the Bucs defense, I mean, there's been games where teams have done whatever they wanted. You know, kind of you think back to that Saints game, and you know, the Rams left some opportunities on the field. Honestly, the Chiefs left plenty of opportunities on the field in that game. And those games were kind of billed as are we worried about Tom Brady games? And meanwhile, the main storyline to me was the Bucs defense looks like it's kind of falling apart here. And so. I think in this game, like you said, this game has to be a dominant performance by them. They went out and they had the same thing against Detroit. They had to dominate that game. They did dominate that game given Detroit's situation. So that's, you know, it's kind of like a box check, but it doesn't necessarily encourage you for the future. So I would say, you know, the Bucs could go out and dominate this game. Washington could not score an offensive point, and I don't know whether I'd know anything more about this defense than I knew before. Now, if they struggle, obviously the concern, you know, elevates a good bit, but you know, when they face, if they win this game and everything in the NFC goes chalk, you know, they're probably going to Green Bay again, where they obviously had great success earlier in the season. So it'll be fascinating to see how that matchup unfolds. But right now, it's, you know, the concern with the Bucs is that I don't know that their four-man pass rush is good enough. And then when they blitz, if Rodgers can solve the blitz, which he didn't last time, but he's gotten much better at as the season's gone off, if he can solve the blitz, I just think coverage-wise, they're not quite strong enough to hold up.
Yeah, expand on that, John. What is the Tampa Bay Bucs defense greatest strength, and what is its biggest weakness?
Their greatest strength is certainly in creating pressure. You know, they don't have an elite player on their front. Shaq Barrett's certainly broken out and been good. You know, Jason Pierre-Paul's late career resurgence with Tampa Bay, again, has been good. But you know, all those guys without Vita Vea right now, they don't really have an elite player up there. But they get and they scheme pressure really well, and there's a lot for offensive lines and quarterbacks to prepare for in terms of pressure. So that's the encouraging thing. The discouraging thing about them really is kind of twofold, both having to do with their coverage. They play a lot of kind of off coverage with their corners, a lot of zone coverage. And it's just, I mean, they drafted all these big, long, athletic corners, and they don't press receivers or crowd the line of scrimmage enough. So, you know, games against the Bears, you think back early in the season, they just gave up a ton of underneath catches all game long, and it was enough in a game where the offense struggled for them to lose the game. So there's some frustrating things philosophically, and then the other thing that they do too much of is they kind of are preoccupied with stopping the run, which is certainly a strength. But in today's NFL, you want to be built first and primarily on stopping the pass. And so the fact that they play so much single high coverage and not enough two deep coverage leaves their corners on an island a lot. And Carlton Davis is really good, but the rest of them aren't that good yet. And the fact that the scheme doesn't allow them to press and get physical with receivers also doesn't help a little bit. So there's some issues in coverage, a disconnect, I think, between the type of talent that they have and the coaching style that they have there that has kind of reared its ugly head at times, especially against really good quarterbacks.
Let's reset this game. 3:35 first quarter. Seahawks trail LA 3-0. Seattle now has the ball at its own 15-yard line. John Wolford started for the Rams. He left because of a hit on a run. It was not a dirty hit. No one was flagged. No ejection or anything. Jamal Adams, neck injury. Questionable to return. So Goff went in for one play, got sacked. Rams kicked a 40-yard field goal and it looks like it's 50-50 for Walford's return. But now that he's banged up and not 100%, my guess is that they'd stick with Goff the rest of the way, the former number one pick. So 3 minutes, first quarter, Seattle 3, L.A. nothing. John, how do you feel about the Bucks in the grand scheme of things? Do you feel like what we saw over the last four games, like that they kicked it into another level? That's the real Bucks team, fool's gold maybe because of who they played. You cover them, you know them inside and out. Do you feel like this is a legit Super Bowl contender?
Well, a lot of people would look at the opponents and they would say that doesn't mean much, you know. But yep. I think the result is certainly, you know, you can take the result with a grain of salt, as in, like, we're not going to score 44 or 47 points every single week. I can give you that. But at the same time, I'm just somebody who looks at process. If they continue to do the same things, you know, like the early in the season, you know, they crushed the Panthers. You know, they scored on every drive in that game and crushed the Panthers. And after the game, I was still like, I just don't know if they've really learned their lesson. You know, even though it was a great offensive performance, I just think Carolina was lost. You know, same with the Chargers early in the season. But coming out of the bye, they have changed things philosophically. They are doing things differently than they did before, and it's a four.
And they got a late bye, right? They were the last team to get a bye.
Correct. Yeah, they were week 13 bye, so it was a late season bye. So we only have a four game sample size to operate from. But all signs and purposes show. I mean, this is a team that has increased play action. I'd say it's still probably not high enough given the numbers we have on how successful play action is around the league. And the Bucs are probably statistically they're the best play action team per pass in the league. They just do it at a rate that's lower than league average, although it was at the bottom of the league before the bye. So they're improved on that. First down, they were one of the worst first down teams in the entire NFL. Hard to believe with the talent they have. One of the reasons, they ran the ball too much on first down. It's a predictable rundown. Now they're throwing the ball about 64-65% of the time on first down, and they're getting much better results. Over the past 4 weeks of the season, they were the number three team in the NFL on first down in terms of success rate and the amount of yards they're able to gain on a consistent basis. So they are doing things philosophically that are different with play action passing, more horizontal concepts in the passing mm-hmm. offense. Things like that are having a lot of success for them right now. And so that's, I think, what's allowed them to get in rhythm and stay in rhythm. At all points throughout the season, we've seen this offense play at a high level. If they just couldn't do it for a full game or week to week, and now we're starting to see that, that's the next step. Now, obviously, the next step after that is, can you do it against an elite defense? And, you could say Taylor Heinicke, Alex Smith, whatever. You know, I know Alex Smith's going to be inactive, but, I mean, it doesn't matter. Those guys don't play defense, because the real test for the Bucs in this game is Washington's right. defense, which has played out of their minds really all season long.
John Ledyard, check him out, read him, watch him on Pewter Report, at Pewter Report, covering the Bucs for them, does an outstanding job. Hey, John, thank you so much. Enjoy the game tonight, okay?
Absolutely. Thanks, Andrew. I appreciate you having me on.
You bet. Aaron Donald, back-to-back sacks, and the Seahawks pushed back almost into their own end zone. Had to punt. L.A. has a very short field. It's Jared Goff back in at quarterback. Late first quarter, the Rams lead on the road 3-0 against their division rival. Earlier, the Bills beat the Colts 27-24. We'll still hear from coaches and Phillip Rivers, more likely than not, from that game. Some reaction there. Clean up that game. Also, we'll continue to look ahead to the game tonight between Washington and Tampa Bay. We know that there's going to be a quarterback change for Washington. It's Taylor Heinicke. We'll talk to a Washington football team insider next. It's the Pony Express on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to Andrew Filippone on CBS Sports Radio.
End of one in Seattle, and the Seahawks trail the Rams 3-0. LA has already made a quarterback change. They started backup John Walford, his second career start. He left the game, got hit by Jamal Adams, questionable to return. I don't think he'll come back now that he's not 100%. Jared Goff is in off of thumb surgery. He was healthy enough to dress, but not healthy enough to start. I don't get that. He's a former number one pick who went to the Super Bowl. If he can play, he plays. Not like John Walford went off last week. He beat the Cardinals, who were also playing a backup. But if the Rams win, they got to win with defense, and that's what they've done so far. L.A. just had a 38-second three-and-out drive. So now the Seahawks have the ball to start the second quarter, deep in their own territory, trailing 3-0. The Seahawks offense is broken, and it has been for a long time. They've been winning with defense, which is ironic because for the first 10 games of this year, Seattle's defense was in a state of disarray. So that's the situation there, 3 versus 6, the Seahawks and Rams. 8:15 Eastern, 5:15 Pacific, it's the Bucks and Washington. Alex Smith reportedly inactive for this game. Let's talk to a guy that does sports talk in D.C. better than anyone. He breaks all kinds of news on the Washington football team. He works for one of our affiliate stations. You hear him on CBS Sports Radio all the time. I'm talking about Grant Paulson from The Fan in Washington. Grant, I'm guessing Ron Rivera and Jack Del Rio are watching the Seattle game thinking, see this? This is what we need to do tonight.
Yeah, I guess so. Or even the Rams side of this, where they've got a 3-0 lead with two quarterbacks who combined for like half of a quarterback's performance to this point. It's just a weird day in the NFL. I was just thinking about this a few minutes ago. Now, the Rams are going with John Wolford, who was in the Alliance of American Football, over Jared Goff, who's now in the game, clearly. And Washington's got to start Taylor Heinicke, who was in the XFL and wasn't a starter in the XFL. He was a backup in the XFL. But their defense has to dominate, and if it does, they will have a shot. And if it doesn't, they'll get run out the gym tonight, and they know that going in. So the question is, can they keep it close? Can they make enough plays on defense to swing the pendulum of this game in their favor?
Do you think they can? Do you think they will?
I think they can. I don't think they will. I mean, defensively, here's the challenge, right, is that the Bucs just bring so much firepower, and there have been teams this year in some of their stinkers where they got destroyed by the Saints on national TV, or they had a bad game against the Giants that they narrowly won. Team a lot like Washington, frankly, out of the NFC East. They had a game against the Bears that was really ugly on primetime as well. They've scuffled, and you've seen those games, and so you think it's possible. I just think with that talent and the message for them all year long essentially being the Bill Belichick, Tom Brady message of the last 20 years, this season's really going to start for us in January. I have a hard time envisioning them being flat or not being 100% committed or their mind elsewhere, which tends to happen, as weird as it seems, when you only get 16 games from time to time in the NFL. You let a game slip away, you take an opponent lightly. I don't think they're going to do that. And what they need to do up front with Chase Young, who's a Pro Bowler, one of two with Justin Jefferson in this rookie class, Montez Sweat, their other defensive end, who's a 9-sack player and a first-round pick a year removed, then a couple of first-rounders in the interior out of Alabama, John Allen and Daron Payne over the last few years, both who are very good players. They need to dominate the line of scrimmage and make Tom Brady move and make him uncomfortable. And I think that that is very doable. The Bucs then have the ability to go to Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette and run the football. And the fact that they're balanced and they can do both, and they're one of the harder teams in the league to get sacks against, number two in the NFL in that area this year, both based on their pass protection and Brady getting the ball out, I just think it's a real tall order. This is not a bad offense that they can hang with. Mm-hmm. At some point, you have to imagine that the Bucs are going to be able to make a play or two.
We're talking to Grant Paulson from The Fan in Washington. Bucks and Washington tonight, 8:15, 5:15 Eastern. Tampa Bay on the road because of the way the NFL does its seeding process. A 7-9 team wins a division and gets a home game, which I don't like. Do you like that, Grant? I mean, to me, it's unfair to New Orleans. New Orleans was the second best team in the NFC. They should be playing the worst team who made the NFC playoffs.
Yeah, I hate it. I'll go further than saying I don't like it. I think it's foolish and ridiculous. Now, I will say that there was an argument, and I remember years ago when I used to say, I mean, 7-9, you can't make the playoffs, to this idea that you have to make winning the division meaningful and that it's got to be important because what else is the point of the season? But, Andrew, I mean, you make the playoffs because you win the division.
Yeah, that's all I would do. That's all I would do is put them in.
You don't need anything else.
Yeah.
In this case, too, think about this year. The NFC East got a gift of a playoff spot. Now, generally speaking, you know, bad division winners 9-7 in a mediocre division or whatever. It's very rare that a 7-9 win teams gets into the playoffs. But you shouldn't get the gift of a home game. The last two teams that made the playoffs at 7-9 have won their first round games, and they had home field advantage that Washington won't have tonight because they're not going to have any fans at FedEx Field, obviously. But why did they get that benefit? I'm totally with you. It's silly.
Well, the thing about it that makes it even worse is everything should be done to set up the teams that had the best regular season to give them the best possible chance of getting to the Super Bowl. And so, for example, if LA were to win this game and Washington were to stun the world and beat Tampa Bay tonight, then the Packers would have to play the Rams instead of Washington. And that's not fair to Green Bay, who should be given every advantage, like I said, to get to a Super Bowl. Take us, you know, in depth here because you're there. Take us through the process of why Alex Smith is inactive for this game tonight, Grant.
Well, I think they made a decision a lot different than maybe what the Rams did with Jared Goff, which is to say that I think their call was, if he's healthy enough to play four quarters, we're going to start him. And if we don't think he can get through an entire game, then we're not going to activate him, and we're going to do everything that we can to give Heinicke as many reps as possible, to put our full support behind him, to design a game plan for him. I mean, Smith, for people that don't know, going back to the middle of December, hurt his calf against the San Francisco 49ers. Now, from what I've been told, and I'm not a medical expert, but it was not necessarily an injury that they feared with a normal quarterback, with a normal leg that would have lingered into the playoffs at this point, almost a month later. But this is the same leg that he had 17 surgeries on that was broken and almost cost him his leg, by the way, and his life. And so because of all of the operations and the muscle and the and everything taken out of his leg, where they're using other parts of his body to kind of form a leg, he just hasn't had the ability to recover. And while the injury itself had nothing to do with the break, I think that the slow recovery and the inability to kind of get fully healthy might. That's my own speculation. But this has lingered over and over. And what's happened is, as he came back and played against the Eagles, as the game went on, he couldn't plant. He couldn't move. And it got worse and worse through four quarters. And so their concern was, can he play 60 minutes? To the point where you saw this week, Andrew. Ron Rivera came out and said, look, this might be a situation where we have to rotate quarterbacks. And we all thought, my God, I mean, Alex Smith is worse off than we thought. Fast forward a few days and he's not even going to play at all.
Grant Paulson from Washington on tonight's game. Right now, Seattle had another drive stall at midfield. They punted it, pinned L.A. inside their own 10-yard line. And now, in the shadow of their own end zone, Jared Goff, 3rd and 8, went deep, incomplete. So 2 minutes into the second quarter, the Rams are going to punt again and give Seattle probably a short field to work with there. You mentioned, Grant, that Heinicke played minor league football, that he was an XFL guy. Beyond that, what can you tell us about this guy?
So this is actually really fascinating for me tonight. So Heinicke played at Old Dominion, and he was one of the best quarterbacks in the country at his level, you know, below at the time Division One when Old Dominion hadn't made the leap yet. A really athletic, mobile, dual threat of sorts. I mean, a pocket guy. They ran almost like an air raid, a little bit of a Mike Leach offense. I talked to his college coach from Old Dominion, Bobby Wilder, recently when we first knew Heinicke was being added. And he called a lot of his own stuff at the line, and he processed a lot of information. He's a super intelligent guy. He was getting his degree from Old Dominion when they gave him the call to come to Washington about a month ago. And the classes he was taking, you know, it was a bunch of like analytics and discrete mathematics and all kinds of numbers laden things. Really, really sharp dude. He's mobile, and I think they like his athleticism to kind of get out of the pocket and maybe present some problems with his feet. There's a reason he's out of the league, though. I mean, it's one thing to present all these positive attributes. Why weren't you starting in the XFL? Why weren't you playing in the National Football League? I don't think he's got a carrying trait. I don't think if you're grading things out on, say, a baseball scouting scale where they use 20 as the floor and 80 as the ceiling and 60 as plus and 70 as all-star, I don't know how many plus grades he's getting on arm strength or on foot speed or on, you know, things other than maybe – giving himself a chance by processing information and everything else is probably a hair below average. I might feel better about him if he'd been here all season. He's been here for 3 minutes and you know, a cup of coffee so far. He played a little bit against the Rams defense that, while they weren't in prevent, was dropping corners and kind of giving him what he wanted on two long drives in garbage time. That's the extent of his play in week 16 before last week when Alex Smith came back. So the expectations for him are very low tonight, but I will tell you this, as far as Heinicke goes, I mean, he is going to have an opportunity to, if he just makes safe, accurate throws, to run this offense without having to do a ton because he knows it. The most interesting thing about him is Scott Turner was the only coach to go to Old Dominion when he was there to talk to him from the NFL before the draft, and he went undrafted. Scott Turner then brought him to Minnesota. Scott Turner then brought him to Carolina. And Scott Turner then brought him in this year with Washington as their offensive coordinator and play caller. So the only reason he's here is because of their OC. And he's basically, whether you want to call him a friend of his or what have you, he is enamored with him. He's interested in him. He likes him. He thinks he can do it. And he thinks he knows his offense. So we'll see if Scott Turner's right.
Grant, 5 minutes left in the game. Is Washington down more than one score?
I think so, yeah. I've got this being around a 10 or 11-point game. I've been saying 27-16 all week. You know, I think a lot of people around the country will assume because it's Heinicke and not Alex Smith that it changes everything considerably. I don't know that I really feel that way. It might have been a point and a half different or so line maybe if Heinicke was going. You know, maybe I now say 30-16 or something like that, a 3-point swing tops. But their offense was bad anyway. The floor is lower. Don't get me wrong. Heinicke could have kind of a meltdown that a guy like Smith, who's just a veteran and been around the block, may not have in terms of sacked and losing a fumble or trying to do too much and throwing the ball into a defender's lap as you're going to the ground or something. That stuff can now happen with an inexperienced neophyte quarterback, as you've seen a million times. But like, they're going from an offense that was not going to move the ball and not going to score more than 13 points to the same thing now with just another guy at quarterback. It's just that instead of a name that everybody knows, it's a guy that nobody knows.
Grant Paulson from The Fan in Washington on Bucks and Washington tonight at 8:15, 5:15 Pacific. Hey, Grant, thank you so much. Enjoy the game, okay?
My pleasure. Thank you. And for people that are invested or interested, I mean, they can hang. It's just that their defense has to be nearly perfect. But it's going to be fun to watch. Thank you.
You bet. DK Metcalf had a temper tantrum on Seattle's sideline after the Seahawks' last drive stalled. They started this drive at their own 48, and a Chris Carson run has them inside LA's 40 right now, trailing 3-0. You'll get more details on this game and the game that preceded it, Colts and Bills, in this latest sports update. Phillip Rivers, we're going to hear from him coming up next on the Pony Express. Here's the latest sports update with Erica Herskowitz.
You're listening to Andrew Filippone on CBS Sports Radio.
27 straight drives for the Rams without a touchdown. But they did score another field goal to take a 6-3 lead on Seattle halfway through the second quarter. Big play on the drive was a 44-yard strike. Goff to Cooper Kupp, who's back, stepped up under heavy pressure, made a deep play. Cup took the ball away from Jamal Adams, a throw that John Wolford would have never made, who started at quarterback for the Rams but left with an injury. And Goff, who dressed as the backup, has come in and has led the Rams on two scoring drives, but they were field goal drives. Seattle did something on their previous possession that you almost never see a team do. They had 4th-and-1 at the Rams' 32-yard line, and Pete Carroll kicked a 50-yard field goal. Most coaches in today's NFL needing only a yard, and it's not an easy field goal. It's a long kick. Send the offense back out there. Pete Carroll elected to tie the game. It went in this early in the game. Man, I would have gone for it. It's only 3-0. I know points are at a premium in this game, but I would have trusted Russell Wilson to make a play on 4th-and-1, even against that number one Rams defense. So it's 6-3, 7:50 to go, second quarter. Earlier today, the Colts' dream died. They got in thanks to the Bills pummeling the Dolphins last week. Well, they got their shot at Buffalo today and should have won the game, really. They lose 27-24, 472 yards of total offense, no turnovers, and they only scored 24 points. Phillip Rivers, 39 years old. Who knows what's next for him? Let's go to the Zoom call and hear from the ancient Colts quarterback on what might have been the last game of his career.
Here, an Indy Player of the Year, then we'll be here. And if it's not, I'll be on a sideline somewhere. I know where. I'll be on the sideline with the Bobcat, coaching the heck out of a high school football team down in South Alabama. So whatever God's will is what I want to happen. And I'll be fine with that. Obviously, if I keep going, if I go on and on with that answer, it'll be nothing but a bunch of emotion talking. But I think that's, at the end of the day, that's clearly what will guide the decision.
Mike Chappell.
Phillip, when you decompress tonight, tomorrow, whatever, is this a game, give credit to Buffalo, yes, but is this a game you guys just let get away with the 2 out of 5 in a red zone and just not making enough plays?
Yeah, it's exactly what we said. really early in the week, what we said all in our meetings and what I've said, production meeting yesterday, and I think to you guys on what was Tuesday, I guess, was it's going to be situational football, scoring touchdowns in the red zone, converting third down, and taking care of the football. Well, we took care of the football. We were 53% on third down, which is a win, but we didn't score in the red zone, and that was obviously the difference in the game. Kicked the field goal in the second drive, didn't get a touchdown on the fourth down, missed a field goal. I mean, you look at those, there you go, right there. That's the difference in the game because, I mean, we had 470 yards off.
All right, that's Philip Rivers right there.
No turnovers.
That's Philip Rivers on his take on the Colts' loss today to the Bills, saying at the beginning of that it's either back to Indy or bust. He'll either go coach high school football or come back for an age 40 season with the Colts, and lamenting against a horrible red zone defense, only coming away with 24 points. Russell Wilson, a pick six to Darius Williams to the house. And L.A., an extra point away from building a 10-point lead against the Seahawks, and they have done that. They've just made the kick. 6:40 to go in the second quarter. It's now Rams 13, Seahawks 3. Look, a lead like this should not be insurmountable for the number three seed in the playoffs in a team that has a franchise quarterback like Russell Wilson. But based on how the Rams defense has been playing and based on how the Seahawks offense has been playing lately, it sure feels like the Seahawks are in big trouble right now. Big time trouble. And man, has their season changed in a short amount of time from all offense and no defense to feeling like right now Seattle's going to need a couple of Jared Goff mistakes to win this game. Plenty of time, but don't want to fall down double digits to this defense. Andrew Filippone, CBS Sports Radio. Sean McDermott, who I think should win the NFL Coach of the Year with the Bills, 13-3. Josh Allen has turned into a franchise quarterback. First win for the Bills in the playoffs since 1995, 25 years ago. Here is the Bills coach after the game on his team's historic win.
Just want to praise God, man, for this afternoon and this day. What a beautiful day in Orchard Park, New York, and to him be all the glory. And just also want to thank the fans, man. What an awesome, awesome day. I know not all the fans out there could be with us today, but we know you're at home cheering for us and supporting us. But what an awesome, awesome day just in terms of the fan support. Kyle leading us off with the opening video and just a very special afternoon for everyone, including everyone that roots for the Bills across the entire world. So really appreciate everyone out there, and go Bills. So with that, we'll open up to your questions.
Hey, Coach, congrats on the win. I know you were talking up the Hall of Fame quarterback that the Colts have over there, and I know he was giving your defense some fits at times. You know, getting off the field on third down was a little tough at times. But your defense had timely plays, it seemed, today, whether it was at the end of the first half down there, backed up on their goal line, or obviously the knockdown with Micah at the end. Can you just address how when plays absolutely had to be made in this game, your defense delivered?
Yeah, I would say that's spot on, Chris. Just as an overall team, we didn't play our best game of the year, and that's in part because the Colts are a really good team. I mean, this is a seventh seed, but as I said all week long, 11 wins and a seventh seed is, and one of those was against Green Bay, who I think is the first seed in the other conference there. So very good team, very well coached team, a lot of respect for them. And we knew it was going to be tough. But our defense, I thought at the end, really stood up, man. That's a tough situation. Fortunately we had the sack on offense. I thought we had momentum and chance to go up, maybe 6 or 10 at that point, but we weren't able to, and I thought our defense stood up in a tough situation against a Hall of Fame quarterback, so it was good to see.
Now, the Indianapolis coach probably is one of the most well-balanced teams that you faced all season, so how proud were you to see your team rise to the occasion and protect the house?
as we looked at kind of the options of who we could play even before the postseason was set, even before the last week of the regular season. In fact, we were kind of doing our research, and the numbers speak for themselves. They were one of the more well-balanced teams. offensively, defensively, and special teams. And as you saw, they gave us fits today. And like I said, they're well coached. They don't beat themselves. Very disciplined group.
All right, that's Sean McDermott, the Bills head coach there. I don't think I've ever asked a question like that in a press conference about defending the house, but that's fine. That's okay. I'm with McDermott on this. One thing the Bills, in addition to ending a long drought, can take solace in for right now is they were able to beat a double-digit win team, and they clearly did not play their best ball. They were opportunistic both offensively and defensively. They capitalized on the Colts' miscues. They play like that again next week against either the Steelers or the Ravens, let's say, hypothetically speaking, they're going to lose. So they didn't play their best ball, and they're still alive in the playoffs. But then, you know, when you come out of the fog of winning a playoff game and that high wears off and you're faced with reality, there's a lot they need to do between now and their next game in order to win. Even though the game's at home and there will be fans and all that's cute and fun. And I've worked in Buffalo and I've lived there and I love that town. But if they're going to keep this thing rolling, they need more than just Josh Allen making big plays to win. And they can't count on the next team they're playing to either have game management miscues, a kicker miss a 33-yard kick, a wide receiver drop a ball on 4th-and-1, an idiotic play call on 3rd-and-1 at the 1-yard line, 3rd-and-goal. I mean, I highly doubt they're going to get that kind of luck next week against the Ravens or the Steelers. They got fumble luck in this game, too. I mean, Allen and the Bills' last possession got fumbled. The ball's out. If the Colts recover, Indy has a super short field, and they probably either put the game in overtime or win it outright with a touchdown. All right, DK Metcalf scores a touchdown after bitching up a storm on the sideline. So they answer the pick six, and Seattle trails LA 13-9 with 3:40 to go. More on that with Carrington Harrison next. Hey, thanks so much to listening to the Pony Express, CBS Sports Radio.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.